Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to learn how a cup of green tea can help you deal with anxiety. This is from Kumamoto University in Japan. More on that because it does a lot more than calm your nerves. It's really good. It activates dopamine and serotonin receptors that are linked to anxiety behavior. So we have a lot to share on health, but also today I'm setting aside a lot of time for a short and a longer video clip. And by the way, you can watch the video clips by going to prn.fm. But for most people, they'll be able to hear it. And I'm building upon the premise, each day a different piece of the puzzle, of how the control over our basic life choices is being taken away. The body should be yours to decide what to do with, what to eat, healthy, as most of you do, as I do, or eat junk food. That should be your right. Now, you may not like the outcome, and I'm sure you won't, unless you're making healthy choices in which you're going to have a healthy outcome. And then you can say, wow, I don't look the same age as other peers who are the same chronological age. I'm at biological age, and I've done the right thing. Good. Remember, for most people, the reality is they will only know the value and rightness of their choices when they reach their destinations. That is the wrong approach to life, because it means that no step in that journey is ever contemplated. No step is ever understood for its significance on that particular 24-hour day. You just bumble through life without absolute direction or overcommitted in the wrong direction, and you wake up one day and, wow, you are someplace. You turn around and think, wow, I could have done it differently. Why not simply ask yourself, what do I want this part of my life to be? What do I want to change? What would I like the outcome to be? And then work on that so you're mindful of every choice you make. It takes a different type of person to do that. But when you have your freedoms of choice taken away by mandatory vaccines, when you have the medical options taken away because first they tried to destroy your right to even have an alternative doctor to work with, we fought a long 10-year battle and won that battle. Most people are not even aware of it except those who participated in it. Mainly that was my ABC network audience. Every week for 3 hours on Sunday night, I held forth on these important issues. And they came to the decision. They believed in having a freedom of choice. If they went to see a chiropractor or a hypnotherapist or a holistic dentist or a holistic medical doctor, they wanted that. They fought back, and we, the people, won. We also won so you could take your vitamins. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to. We saved the entire profession of chiropractic. But now, we're trying to take back our rights to have alternative medicine covered by insurance so we don't have to pay for it out of pocket. And more Americans are now saying yes to some form of complementary alternative approach or prevention. And that's good. That's positive. But then again, the industry pushed back and saying, no, we want our doctors, our scientists, our politicians, our directors of the CDC and the FDA to determine what you should use. And we don't have good science, we have proprietary science. So that's why I've been doing these series. Now, today I'm adding to that about canceling the cancel culture. You must fight back. You cannot hide in a closet someplace and not stick your head up and expect not to be a victim. They will come for you. In New York State, which is a police state, which is a terrible corrupt state, from the city council, which is terribly corrupt. My brother just wrote a brilliant article this morning. I'll read to you later, not today, on how all the small businesses, 3,000 and counting, have officially gone out of business. Probably another 3,000 to 5,000 will open and then close because they will be underfunded and can't sustain it. So you're looking at the largest single mass exodus of small businesses and their employees in New York's history, all because Governor Cuomo, yet he will not be held accountable. That's the corruption of the politics in the state. So we do have cures for COVID, and I'm going to give you more information on that. You've heard from the doctors, you've heard from the scientists, you've heard the experts around the world, because we're the one place that will play those. All the other networks, not a word, and all the other platforms, Google, Facebook, Twitter, they cancel it. It's called the cancel culture. So today you can have an outstanding reputation like Rupert Sheldrake or Deepak Chopra or any of the hundreds of leading-edge clinicians and scientists. Their reputations were canceled. They were disgraced, demeaned, shamed for only helping heal people and the planet. That's how perverse we are living today. We are in a full-stage police state. We are in a time of absolute tyranny. We have a small group of radicalized anarchists and political operatives working to control the Democratic Party, which they will. They'll get Joe Biden elected, which he will be. And then watch your freedoms simply dissolve, because they will be going after everybody who believed in anything that challenged their views and putting you in the cancel culture. So you're going to hear about this today. Also from David Rubin. I used to watch him on the Young Turks, very progressive and a classic liberal. But then he left the left. Why? And now they're trying to cancel him. Fortunately, he has built a good reputation, so he still has a strong audience, actually stronger than when he was on the Young Turks. So those two we're going to hear today. Plus, I'll give you the latest today on good news about COVID, bad news about statins, good news about how young people don't easily transmit the virus, even less so than influenza, which is really great, bad news about face masks. So these are some of the things we're going to take on. And of course, always with health and healing. It is called matcha, M-A-T-C-H-A. And it can reduce your anxiety. And as I mentioned earlier, it will activate your dopamine and serotonin receptors, and that will directly impact instantly your anxiety levels. This was research done at Kumamoto University in Japan. By the way, matcha literally means powdered tea. It refers to the powder made from finely ground leaves of shade-grown tea, the tea tree, the Camellia sinensis. Matcha has been used medically since ancient times. In Japan in particular, it was used to help people relax, prevent obesity, and treat certain skin conditions. Now, there's an article in the peer-reviewed journal of Functional Medicine, Functional Foods, that the Japanese researchers found it works on our mental well-being as well. So, something to help you. From Sirit University in Turkey comes a study about oncology or cancer patients. They found that Reiki, R-E-I-K-I, and guided imagery can really reduce pain and fatigue in oncology or cancer patients. That's good news. These are non-toxic and natural. And also, they can help people maintain a better immune system if they don't have cancer. From the Federal University of Ouro Preto in Brazil, when you don't have enough vitamin B12, you have an increased risk of high-grade cervical lesions. So, that's according to the latest study. So, diet and lifestyle play a very important role in the etiology of various tumors. And the serum concentration of folate or folic acid and vitamin B12 is associated with the carcinogenesis, since they are involved in DNA methylation and nucleotide synthesis. And just lay language, what I'm saying is the more B12, let's say a milligram, the more folic acid, a milligram, methylated both, you have far less chance of high-grade cervical lesions. From University of California at Irvine, they looked at cilantro and said, why is this so good for the brain? And this was published in the FASEB Scientific Journal. And they found that cilantro activates, which is a form of parsley, certain potassium channels in the brain, which helps prevent seizures. How about that? Now, historically, in protocols that I've used with people with seizures, I have them make a drink in the morning, and I put a high B-complex in there, extra NAD, non-flush niacinamide, but also coriander, C-O-R-I-A-N-D-E-R, and cilantro. And that makes a big difference. It's an anticonvulsant, and it's also an antidepressant, and it's anti-inflammatory. So it really helps medical condition, but it especially helps epileptic seizures. So I'm glad to see that now, 40 years after I've been using this protocol, yeah, cilantro activates the neurological potassium channels to alleviate seizures. How about that? So that's good news. Also, there's a new study from the University of Georgia. Perinatal DHA, that's your most active fraction of the omega-3 fatty acids, improves cognition and alters brain function organization in experimental research. So, pregnant women, please take DHA supplements. It can enhance cognitive performance, brain function, functional organization, and the brain monoamine neurotransmitter status of offspring using this. So, good. And one other thing is that baby boomers show concerning decline in cognitive functioning. Ohio State University did the study, and it said that trends reverses progress over several generations. What does that mean? It means that in a reversal of trends, American baby boomers scored lower on a test of cognitive functioning than did members of previous generations. Findings show that average cognitive scores of adults age 50 and older increase from generation to generation, beginning with the greatest generation, that's between 1890 and 1923, and peaked among war babies 1942 and 47. But scores began to rapidly decline and decrease further in the mid-baby boomers born 1954 to 59. So now what it means is that the average person aging over 50 doesn't spend a lot of time on looking at how they should deal in a constructive way with higher levels of loneliness and depression and inactivity or retirement and obesity and less likely to have a relationship. I want to make it very clear that I consider one of the 20 pillars of total health to be a healthy relationship. Now, it may be a married relationship or it may be a partner in a relationship. But those relationships, if both people are on the high vibratorial level, meaning that you're not sharing your dysfunction or your drama, because that's destructive to both people. You end up prematurely aging, being more susceptible to cancers, heart disease, stroke, etc. And a lot of people stay in those relationships when they shouldn't be in them at all. And the first time there's a red flag, say goodbye. But because of much of our ethic of how we're trained by our parents to stay in relationships, even if they're not working at the time, well, they'll work out in time. But more often than not, they don't. And where's their saying that you can't stop something if it's not working? I mean, what if it worked this way? What if every day that you went out to get in your car, only one out of every 6 days would the car start? And then for every day that the car did start, you would only get to be driving three blocks and it stopped. You know, at what point are you going to say, if I can't fix the car, I'll get another one? But somehow we feel this guilt and shame that we're giving up on something. And what we're giving up on is the idea that I can be free to make better choices at the higher level of my existence. So if you have a quality relationship with joy and happiness and fun and experience and exploring and curiosity and excitement, that's a great relationship. And if you're blessed to have one of those, remind your partner of how precious they are to you. Never take it for granted, because most relationships are episodic. There'll be a period in life where we have a relationship or friendship, and then it's no longer there. How many times, for example, have you thought, wow, what if I did it differently? What if I acted differently, said things different? What if I was more patient? What if I didn't hide my feelings? What if? But you didn't. So instead of beating up on yourself, use the cumulative experience to the next time you go into a relationship Don't allow any of the limitations from your previous relationships to limit this one. And like anything, if you're getting wiser with age, that's different than intelligent, you can even have better relationships later in life. So, on another show, or in a special lecture, it'll take me about 3 hours. I'll do the 20 keys to a wonderful life. I've had those thoughts for a long time. I just haven't done that lecture yet. In any case, that's what they're finding here. So you've got a whole lot of baby boomers today who have lower cognitive functioning. They have less wealth. They have less security because of what's happened with COVID. And they're in crisis, real crisis. And I know because some of these people were in both of my anti-aging study groups. Now, no one knew that because we didn't ask. We told people, do not tell people your stories of woe, because people are not here to hear your problems. People are here to work on themselves, and you need silence. You need to grow. We'll help you with your problems. And indeed, we did. And some wonderful transformations happened. I mean, spectacular transformations. So I was happy about that. But that's when I was with them every day, and I could see when they were in a mood and sit and talk with them about what's on your mind. How can we change this to a better mindset, better outcome? And having a support system that allows you to do that without judging you, that's what we're lacking so often in our society. And finally, from Harvard University comes a study published in the American Psychological Association Journal that experiencing childhood trauma makes your body and brain age faster. That's correct. That could help explain why children who suffer trauma often face poor health later in life. And that's not good. So we should be even having classes in understanding and overcoming childhood trauma. We don't, but we should. In fact, I'm going to be inaugurating in the very near future, probably the next 90 days, the opening of the Veterans Village. This has been a project I promised a group of vets. And by the way, I'm going back over to see if I can find any of them. I'm going to go in the woods over in Titusville, where I first met these men and women, and tell them, now you got a home. It's going to cost you nothing. You're going to get great food. You're going to get humanistic counseling. You're going to get holistic medical treatment for any post-traumatic stress disorder. You're going to have petting animals from llamas to senior dogs to little goats. You're going to have a wonderful time, and we're going to give you the tools you need so you can reenter society and go back home to your family. So that's happening real soon. But that journey begins by helping them at every level, including childhood trauma or war trauma. From our news, this is from a Dr. Pascal Sarkre, Global Research. Quote, we have a treatment in COVID-19 and it doesn't have to support Big Pharma and their experts. Hydroxychloroquine is effective in treating COVID-19. It is effective in halting the progression of the disease, provided it is given early enough and provided it is given in accordance with contraindications and safety use, meaning 200 milligrams. And it's also to be given with zinc and an antibiotic. Quote, there is a treatment for this disease, not in intensive care where it is too late, but to prevent it from going to intensive care. So to be given early enough by general practitioners or emergency doctors. And this is an MD, PhD, professor of epidemiology at the renowned Yale University School of Public Health. And his name is Dr. Harvey Reisch, R-I-S-C-H. Quote, as professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health, I have authored more than 300 peer-reviewed publications and currently hold leadership positions on the editorial board of several leading journals. I'm used to advocating positions within the medical establishment, so I was disconcerted to find that in the midst of a crisis, I had to fight for a treatment that was fully supported by the scientific data, but for reasons unrelated to a proper understanding of the science, was sidelined. As a result, tens of thousands of COVID-19 patients are dying needlessly. Fortunately, the situation can be reversed easily and quickly. I'm talking, of course, about the drug hydroxychloroquine. Then there's a scientific study, effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine confirmed in the University of Minnesota, clinical trial data study. These results show that the time elapsed between infection and the start of treatment is crucial for the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for COVID-19. Quote, there is strong statistical evidence that treatment with hydroxychloroquine reduces the proportion of symptomatic patients when used prophylactically immediately after exposure, especially if treatment is started within 2 days, end quote. And then it goes on citing study after study after study, and also the zinc and the azithromycin, the antiretroviral. So you've got three combinations that create cures and also can be used prophylactic at 200 milligrams. That's the key. Mind you, The Lancet had to retract a fraudulent article, the New England Journal of Medicine, the same, because the one that was condemning hydroxychloroquine by only promoting a particular viral treatment was shown to have no data. None. It was just fraudulent. So now we know the mainstream media and the corpus of the Democratic leadership need to destroy anyone's wanting to have hydroxychloroquine. $10 a tablet, maybe $50 for the whole treatment. You take it twice a week at 200 milligrams, plus your zinc and the antibiotic. And all these mainstream doctors are succeeding using it, but in comes Fauci's hidden hand, in comes Bill Gates, in comes the people who want you to only get a drug and a vaccine. Well, if this works the way it does, why in the world would you use a completely experimental vaccine? That's a piece of this puzzle. Next up, scientists analyzed 35 previous scientific peer-reviewed studies in the effect of the cheap drugs. 3/4 of trials reported zero reduction in mortality among statin users. Statins are routinely prescribed to people thought to be at risk of heart disease. Okay. That was from Eleanor Hayward, health reporter of the Daily Mail. So once again, we've said all along, there's natural non-toxic ways of dealing with heart conditions, and statins would not be one of my choices. Quote, University of Sydney, COVID-19 study shows transmission in schools is considerably less than influenza. And when was the last time we closed all of our schools because it was the flu in a school? We didn't. We had people wear gloves, alcohol or bleach, hydrogen peroxide desks, and all doorknobs, etc., and take their vitamin D and vitamin C. So here's the takeaway message from this study, The Lancet Child and Adolescent Health, peer-reviewed major study. And researchers from the National Center for Immunization Research and Surveillance and the University of Sydney released their findings just this week. Transmission of COVID-19 in schools is less than other respiratory viruses. Have you heard about that? Nope. Also, from the Swiss Policy Research, are face masks effective? The evidence. An overview of the current evidence regarding the effectiveness of face masks. 1. Studies on the effectiveness of face masks. Quote, so far, most studies found little to no evidence for the effectiveness of cloth masks on the face in the general population, neither as personal protection equipment nor as source control. 2. A May 2020 meta study on pandemic influenza published by the U.S. CDC found that face masks had no effect, neither as personal protection equipment nor as a source control. A July 2020 review by the Oxford Center for Evidence-Based Medicine found that there is no evidence for the effectiveness of cloth masks against virus infection or transmission. 3. COVID-19 cross-country study by the University of East Anglia came to the conclusion that a mask requirement was of no benefit and could even increase the risk of infection. 4. An April 2020 review by two U.S. professors in respiratory and infectious disease from the University of Illinois concluded that face masks have no effect in everyday life, neither as self-protection nor to protect third parties, so-called source control. 5. An article in the New England Journal of Medicine from May 2020 came to the conclusion that cloth face masks offer little to no protection in everyday life. 6. In July 2020, a study by Japanese researchers found that cloth masks offer zero protection against coronavirus due to their large pore size and generally poor fit. 7. A 2015 study by the British Medical Journal, Open, found that cloth masks were penetrated by 97% of particles and may increase infection risk by retaining moisture or repeated use. Japan, despite its widespread use of face masks, experienced its most recent influenza epidemic, with more than 5 million people falling ill just 1 year ago in January and February 2019. However, unlike SARS-2, the influenza virus is transmitted by children. 2. Several countries and states that introduce mandatory face masks on public transport and in shops in early summer, such as California and Argentina, nevertheless saw a strong increase in infections from July onwards, indicating a low effectiveness of masks. And it goes on and on and on for pages. These are all scientific studies. A German study claimed that the introduction of compulsory masks in Germany cities has led to a decrease in infections, but the data does not support this. In some cities, there was no change, in others, a decrease, in others, an increase in infections. The city of Jena was an exception only because it simultaneously introduced the strictest quarantine rules in Germany, but the study did not mention this. So it goes through all of this, but did you know any of this? Did you see any of this? Did the media have a debate on this? No. My feeling is quite simple. I believe in freedom of choice. I believe, as a scientist who's worn masks in laboratory, in fact, in laboratories where there was viral research going on, bacterial research going on, I have seen the value of not just a mask, but, you know, full face protection, like with a shield, a hat shield, and a mask. But then again, you got to have an N99 mask to really filter those particulate matter. And now you should get a mask that has an air generator that goes to it, so you're taking fresh air into the mask and therefore not allowing the carbon dioxide to accumulate. Would I wear a mask on planes? You bet. And since I'm not around most people any of the time, I'm on my animal sanctuary. But if I knew I was going to be around people, I would stay a safe distance, because I know how far normal conversation spews air particulate matter, about 6 to 9 feet. But if they cough or sneeze, it can be up to 15 feet. So, you know, I pay attention to these things. But it's your choice. I'm just showing what the science actually shows. So those are some updates, good updates and questionable updates. And again, what we're sharing with you now may come around to being recognized, but in the future, not right now. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from a person. His name is David Rubin, and he was a card-carrying member of the liberal and left community for most of his life. And then something changed. We'll hear what changed, because he's not alone. I think it's time for everyone to say goodbye to the left and goodbye to the right. Neither one of them, in their current manifestations, are honoring the people, the environment, and good choices. They're all controlled by the same group. That is not the same as traditional liberals and traditional conservatives. And I see a lot of common sense still being offered with those two groups who have been excluded completely and frequently shamed because their views are not in lockstep with those in power. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Do you believe in free speech? Do you believe that people should be judged by their character, not their skin color? Do you believe in freedom of religion? If you believe these things, you're probably not a progressive. You might think you're a progressive. I used to think I was. My show, The Rubin Report, was originally part of the Progressive Young Turks network. Progressives struck me as liberals, but louder. Progressives were the nice guys. They looked out for the little guy. They cared about women and minorities. They embraced change. In short, who wouldn't want to be a progressive? But over the last couple of years, the meaning of the word progressive has changed. Progressives used to say, I may disagree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it. Not anymore. Banning speakers whose opinions you don't agree with from college campuses, that's not progressive. Prohibiting any words not approved of as politically correct, that's not progressive. Putting trigger warnings on books, movies, music, anything that might offend people, that's not progressive either. All of this has led me to believe that much of the left is no longer progressive, but regressive. This is one of the reasons I've spent so much time on my show talking about the regressive left. This regressive ideology doesn't judge people as individuals, but as a collective. If you're black or female or Muslim or Hispanic or member of any other minority group, you're judged differently than the most evil of all things, a white Christian male. The regressive left ranks minority groups in a pecking order to compete in a kind of oppression Olympics. Gold medal goes to the most offended. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream that his children would be judged by their character and not their skin color was a liberal idea, but these days it's not a progressive ideal. And what about religious freedom, the idea that no one else can tell you what you have to believe? Surely progressives still support that basic right. Well, not so much. I'm a married gay man, so you might think that I appreciate the government forcing a Christian baker or photographer or florist to act against their religion in order to cater, photograph, or decorate my wedding. But you'd be wrong. A government that can force Christians to violate their conscience can force me to violate mine. If a baker won't bake you a cake, find another baker. Don't demand that the state tell him what to do with his private business. I'm pro-choice, but a government that can force a group of Catholic nuns, literally called the Little Sisters of the Poor, to violate their faith and pay for abortion-inducing birth control can force anyone to do anything. That's not progressive, that's regressive. Today's progressivism has become a faux moral movement hurling charges of racism, bigotry, xenophobia, homophobia, Islamophobia, and a slew of other meaningless buzzwords at anyone they disagree with. The battle of ideas has been replaced by a battle of feelings, and outrage has replaced honesty. Diversity reigns supreme as long as it's not that pesky diversity of thought. This isn't the recipe for a free society, it's a recipe for authoritarianism. For these reasons, I can no longer call myself a progressive. I don't really call myself a Democrat either. I'm a classical liberal, a free thinker, and as much as I don't like to admit it, defending my liberal values has suddenly become a conservative position. So if you think people should be able to say what they think without being punished for it, that people should be judged by their behavior, not their skin color, and that people should be able to live the way that they want to live without government interference, then there's not much left on the left for you. I'll keep trying to explain that to progressives until I'm totally left out. I'm Dave Rubin of The Rubin Report for Prager University.
He's just one of many, and unfortunately there is no room left on the left, as there was no room on the right, for those who would challenge the corruption of many of their ideas and their massive grab for power, no matter what they were calling themselves. In point of fact, a progressive, since I founded the Progressive Radio Network, and we have more progressives, real progressives, on here than any other station in the world, is you're not tethered to an ideology that does not allow proper discourse, debate, and the ability to change one's perception or reality. You're looking for the truth, wherever that truth is. And that's why we have so many independents today. By the way, we have more independents than conservative or Republicans and Democrats combined, but no one seems to be paying attention to that. I mentioned yesterday about the Cultural Revolution. I gave you a whole tutorial on the French Revolution and Robespierre, and also on Mao Zedong. I want to put this in perspective because we're going through our own cultural revolution right now, like it or not. And we have to understand that in the cultural revolution that we're going through now, it is not the same as Mao, nor is it the same as Robespierre. It's different. It is our own time to ask, what do we value and why do we value it? And how can we get along? Or do we even want to get along? And have we allowed identity politics to so infiltrate every corpuscle of the social consciousness that we pride ourselves in what we're not or what we are that is different from each other? We don't look for a commonality. We don't look for harmonizing. We don't look for the joy of just being a human being with another human being without any concern about what their economics are, ethnicity, the culture. And the culture is really what defines. It's not a race. Race is merely the historical attributes of the melanin in our skin. We shouldn't be judging people by that. Yet they have been, and that was wrong when they were. We should not judge someone just by their culture, because much of what really enthralls us by another group is their culture, the French cuisine, the Italian cuisine, the couture of the French design of fabric and manufacturing of interesting garments. But all around the world, each culture has something that can share with us. Using it is not cultural appropriation. That's one of their new gimmicks. Oh, you can't eat Italian food unless you're Italian. Oh, you can't go into a French restaurant unless you're French. That's how absurd it's gotten. You can't change a baby's diaper till you get permission. Do you see how far this will go? They just keep hurling one insanity and an ante after another as if somehow we're supposed to accept all this. And we shouldn't. And if you stay quiet, they win. Because what now becomes something stupid and foolish and immature, tomorrow, with those in power, could become law. And you could be punished by not becoming a part of it. And that's why I think we have to be very conscientious of what's going on in our society today. In a moment, a whole discussion, a really good discussion that I'm going to share with you. I just want to mention that we have back in stock, and for those of you listening, we have our anti-aging elixir. This is probably, of all the anti-aging things I've ever created, this is number one, because I didn't know it could be done. In fact, no other manufacturer except the one I'm using could do it. It's a liquid, you drink it, you keep it refrigerated, you have to shake it up. It's not sweet, it's a little on the tart side, and it's not homogenized. So understand that you're getting something you would never get in your normal life. Here's what's in it. You're getting the apple, organic apples, organic mangosteen, and organic tart cherries, and organic pomegranate, organic acai, organic nopal, organic noni, organic turmeric, and organic ginger, and organic sea buckthorn, and ascorbic acid, and organic mango, and organic papaya, and organic, these are all organic, so I'll just mention like mangosteen, light lychee, a beetroot, aloe vera, wolfberry, which is goji, elderberry, yeah, elderberry's in here. One of the most powerful things you can ever put in your body every morning. Cranberry, blueberry, a kakadu, which is a plum, a moringa, a baobab, that's a tree, one of the most beautiful trees in Africa, a maca, which is, again, in the plum family, stevia and graviola. And so all this together, it's vegan, it's kosher, it's gluten-free, and it's halal. So it's the best of the best. So there's nothing you can drink in the morning that's going to be better than this to start your day. The anti-aging elixir, you shake it, put about a teaspoon into a cup. You can add other things you want, like green apple, lemon, etc. So that's it. It's back in stock. I can only sell one per customer. I'm sorry. I could only get 1,000 bottles, and I think about 900 bottles. That'll go in about 3 weeks. We've already placed another order. But those ingredients were hard to come by, so I'm limited. But I'm giving with this my Power Aging DVD and this special webinar. It's a long webinar, how to add 30 years, healthy years to your lifespan. You're getting all this, $120 value for $59. You're saving 59, you're saving $59.99 and it's costing you $59.99. How about that? So this is one good way to start your day, one good way to watch video and listen to a webinar and watch the webinar also, and call this number and get it. It'll go out today. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. One to a customer. I'm sorry. Ingredients are hard to come by. Some ingredients, I had to wait 5 months to get a single ingredient. And I don't compromise on my formula. I won't just eliminate an ingredient because I know the power of synergy. So get your anti-aging elixir and have that every morning in your juice. Okay? I know a lot about the cancer culture because they've been trying to cancel me for a long time. It hasn't worked. In part, it has. I'm sure that there are publishers. I know that some publishers, but thank goodness when you're the best-selling health author in world history, there are other publishers who want your books. But Wikipedia is a cancel culture, and it cancels everybody in the alternative field. Every practitioner, you're talking about over a million practitioners throughout the world. You're talking about canceling traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, African medicine, Bush medicine from the Caribbean, what are called the Bush Hut doctors, canceling chiropractic, canceling massage, canceling energy medicine, homeopathy, body-mind medicine, intravenous medicine. You're canceling everything, and they shouldn't be allowed to get away with it. That's why we're fighting them. And by the way, stage two of our five-stage effort is in process right now. Boy, is it going to surprise them. It's going out this week. I'll notify you what it is so you can see it and download it for yourself next week. Now, to this special.
History has always taught us that once they start destroying symbols, they soon turn on flesh and blood. For every statue the mob tears down, they'll also tear down a person's career and reputation. And for every film or book that gets banned, they will silence a human voice. This insidious practice has a name, cancel culture. In this Sky News special investigation, we will chat to those who have felt the wrath of the mob simply for holding an opinion, those whose careers have been shattered, whose lives have been turned upside down, and we'll talk to the experts about where this sinister cancel culture came from and how it now threatens even you. Indeed, some of the people who contacted us are so cowed by the thought of being cancelled that they dare not speak up publicly. But we're not only going to look at how far this cancer has spread, we're going to do something about it. We're going to give you the tools to cancel culture.
But what exactly is cancel culture? Surely it just means people getting fired for being unprofessional or doing something highly offensive or inappropriate. No, that is not what we are talking about here. Of course, there are plenty of examples of people fairly or unfairly losing their jobs. But cancel culture is far more insidious than that. Cancel culture is when people are silenced and have both their reputation and their livelihood publicly taken away from them, simply because they expressed a politically incorrect point of view. In that respect, cancel culture is no different to other totalitarian forms of censorship. You are silenced because you said the wrong thing, and frequently, you simply disappear. You've been cancelled.
Well, cancel culture is just a way of pushing people out of the public square, right? Different ways to silence them. Different ways to discredit and sideline them. And that is why it's so dangerous in our system, Rowan, because our free and open society depends on the public square, everyone having their say, and we, in a free society, settle our disputes by public argument in the public square, not by violence.
It means denial of freedom of speech. The ability to discuss the issues of grave concern without putting your life at risk, without putting your livelihood at risk. It's so detrimental to just civil discourse nowadays.
Cancel culture is when people have both their reputation and their livelihood destroyed simply because they expressed a politically incorrect point of view.
It's when essentially your argument is cut off because you're a bad person. So they don't engage in the actual argument. They just make out you're a bad person and that's the end of the story. You don't have to listen to that person anymore.
The issue is not the specific topic. Whether it's climate change, immigration, multiculturalism, same-sex marriage, or any other controversial topic, the actual subject matter is not what the real target is. The sole aim of cancel culture is to so totally traumatise the individual that they never dare open their mouth again.
By cancellation, what they tend to mean is the destruction of a person's reputation, the smearing of them with all of the worst accusations of our time, and preferably, in the eyes of the activists, the losing of not just their current job, but any likelihood of further employment in the future.
Cancel culture has actually taken us back probably about 80 years, back to the 1930s, where you not only want to argue with someone about difference of opinions, but you just want to destroy their career, and destroy their entire life and that. So it's costing people jobs, it's costing businesses money. It's not just about, we got a different view, we can argue about that different view. It's about, I'm going to destroy you.
So what they do is they use posturing and violence to try and force through an argument that has no grounding in any civilized society.
It's not justice, it's a lynch mob. It's a group of people who do not adhere to the standards of innocent until proven guilty, but want the guilty verdict nonetheless, and are going to go to whatever lengths to achieve it. And there's also no measure of where that punishment ends. So maybe you did something silly, you said something silly. Well, the punishment for that is always going to be death. There's no measure to what your crimes are. So it's just these hordes of people online, not the size of a town square, but millions and millions of people with unlimited power to comment, to contact your bosses, your neighbors, your schools, whatever, and destroy your life.
Sadly, cancel culture has a long and sinister history. From the Salem witch trials in the 17th century, book burnings in the 1930s, and the McCarthy Red Scare in the 1950s.
Have you no sense of decency, sir, at long last? Have you left no sense of decency?
Well, I think there's always been, within the human psyche, a desire to push out people who challenge orthodoxies.
And there are dozens of modern examples. A senior executive forced out of Boeing for something he said 30 years ago. Bettina Arndt being shunned and silenced earlier this year for a tweet. Australian comedian Chris Lilley had his own shows cancelled.
What did the priest say when I punched him in the dick?
What?
You're a dickhead!
You're a comedian. You're going to offend somebody, you know? And we all stop and say, no, we shouldn't, but hey, hang on. Why don't we just say, look, I find it funny. If you don't, well, you're hard luck.
Chris Lilley, for example, he's taking on those characters. It's not malicious in my view. Though if the people who are portrayed, you know, the cultures, the Tongan culture or whatever, is offended by it, then that's disappointing. Maybe, you know, then you have to take that into account. But I think humour is often a bit edgy. And so, no, I'm more than happy to let humorists and cartoonists have their say.
But intriguingly, there are plenty of those who do have sympathy with the idea of cancel culture.
I'm a white privileged woman. Like, if the First Nations people said that they want it gone, it's gone. If black people said that they want it gone, it's gone. Like, it's not for me to decide that. It's for me to back those people up that are making those decisions.
Indeed, some of the people we approached to discuss this topic agreed with the importance of it, but simply did not dare speak up publicly for fear of the effect on their families. This is barbaric.
You wouldn't be interested in being interviewed about our old mate James Cook over there, would you?
No, thanks.
Okay, mate. We're looking to chat to people about the statue there. Would you be interested in being filmed for television?
Sorry, I gotta run.
You gotta run?
And in much the same vein, we found many people simply reluctant to talk about even the topic of cancel culture.
I'd rather not.
You'd rather not? You sure?
Yeah, I won't.
Okay.
I won't.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Anyone can fall foul of the mob. You, too, can be cancelled, lose your job, be lynched by social media, terrorised, just because you expressed an opinion.
That is not compatible with our free, proud, open society where we govern ourselves through free public argument. And that argument cannot be constrained or we are no longer a free society.
The surprising thing is, it's remarkably effective. I set up the Free Speech Union back in February to try and protect people from being cancelled merely for dissenting from progressive orthodoxies. And when we first set it up, I got about 6 calls a week from people who needed our help. Now I'm getting about 6 calls a day.
The number of people in our societies, in countries like Australia and Britain, who are increasingly just persuaded to keep their heads down, to submarine their views. And here's what happens with that. Perfectly reasonable views, indeed views held by the majority of the public, are turned into or portrayed as if they are reprehensible.
And here in Australia, we are not immune to it. It is coming at us like a freight train.
I think a turning point is happening now for, you know, the quiet Australians who have been quiet for so long, who are now realising, whoa, you know, I've been quiet for too long and look what's happening all around us. And, you know, they'll come for you too. So you have to stand up to it.
Cancel culture can hit you out of the blue and it can be for no logical or factual reason whatsoever. But even when it's a lie, you have no way of fighting back.
2016, when I published a book during the marriage campaign as head of the Australian Marriage Forum. And it was a labour of love, this book, and it turned out to be, in, as Lyle Shelton, head of our campaign, said, it was the seminal work of the No Case. But the printer for my publisher, Connor Court, at the very last minute refused to print the book. Actually, literally quarter to midnight the day before the book launch.
I was essentially cancelled by the university for saying that a lot of the work on the Great Barrier Reef is not properly checked, tested and replicated, and that some of the institutions were untrustworthy. And they didn't want to engage in that argument, so I was fired, essentially.
Obviously, last year I had my my speaking tour and I had people stand at the front at one event and protest when they had no idea whatsoever what I was talking about in my speaking tour. There's been demands that I shouldn't be allowed to speak about Indigenous issues because I don't toe the line, I don't follow the narrative, I challenge the status quo.
It was kind of bizarre, actually, because my wife had sort of warned me that this might happen because of my outspoken view suggesting that men can't change sex and become women. But I actually thought she was just being paranoid. So when the police actually did contact me, I didn't know whether to be shocked, outraged, or just laugh out loud, quite frankly.
In the first lockdown in Melbourne, we were one of the first businesses to kind of stay open. Well, we stayed open the whole time and we pivoted quite quickly. We got a little bit of media traction.
Lucky Penny on Chapel Street was once a bustling all-day brunch spot. Determined to stay afloat, the venue's been transformed.
What was Lucky Penny Functions and Cafe is now the Lucky Penny Grocery Store.
And then one on Twitter must have hit someone's nerve and we got a lot of backlash. And within 24 hours we had a full anti-Lucky Penny campaign put against us. And then they got all of their followers to do negative reviews on our Google page and our Facebook page.
You see, cancel culture is no different from other totalitarian forms of censorship. It doesn't matter whether your argument has merit or not. You are cancelled simply because you said the politically wrong thing. and the cost to your livelihood, your family, your social life and your mental health can be devastating.
It's very racist. You see, in fact, the last 20 years, I can say that the vast majority, probably the 99.9% of racial abuse that I have received has been through that cancel culture and the left. Because I had, they not only say that your opinions are wrong, that you're just some horrible terms, and they did affect me at one stage. I did have very serious mental health problems, and in fact last year when I was attacked, there's the moment, and this is public knowledge, that where my wife found me in the backyard laying on the ground in the rain. Contemplating about, because my backyard goes over 20 metres.
Well, that one wasn't a good example. Winston Churchill would be someone that should have a complete honest review of him. Let me just summarize before we end. The primary similarities between French revolutionaries and 21st century wokedom is a yearning for ever-increasing ideological purity, which leads itself to identifying more and more categories of people and ideas is unacceptable. This generates chronic instability, as people can never quite know if they and their ideas remain among the elect. Cancel culture actively seek out opponents whose existence is seen as obstructing the creation of a new world purified of error. Will the woke turn on themselves eventually? Probably, but not before they do an enormous amount of damage. And that's why I believe we should pay attention. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.